Well, you remember last time on the tape that Steve made, we were talking about Hume's argument against miracles. And you remember Hume's argument was that because miracles are intrinsically improbable, that therefore no amount of evidence could ever go to establish a miracle. This is the same argument that Bart Ehrman uses in his books and courses and that he used in the debate. You cannot prove a miracle like the resurrection because miracles are so inherently improbable. And what I explained is that this commits a fundamental logical fallacy with regard to probability theory. If we let R be the resurrection, the probability calculus requires that the probability of R on the specific evidence and the background information be equal to a certain ratio. Now here R will be the hypothesis of Jesus' resurrection, E will be the evidence of the empty tomb, the post-mortem appearances, the origin of the disciples' belief, that's the historical evidence, and then B is the background information we have about the world in general. And you remember I explained last week that this is equal to a very complicated ratio, which consists of first the intrinsic probability of the resurrection on the background information. How probable is the resurrection of Jesus just given our background knowledge of the world? And this is then multiplied by the probability of the evidence given the resurrection and our background information. That is to say, how probable does the resurrection hypothesis make the evidence? And this is the explanatory power of the resurrection hypothesis. This is its intrinsic probability. This is its explanatory power. And then I explained, you just move everything that's above the line down below the line here. So you just reproduce the probability of R on B times the probability of E on R and B. And then you will add to that the probability of the hypothesis that the resurrection did not occur. That is, the probability of no resurrection, given our background information, times the probability of the evidence, given no resurrection, and the background information, where the dash stands for not. So this is going to be the probability of no resurrection given the background information and the probability of the evidence given no resurrection. That is, how well can you explain the empty tomb, the post-mortem appearances, the origin of the disciples' faith if there were no resurrection? So this will consist of all of the alternative naturalistic explanations of the resurrection, the wrong tomb theory, the conspiracy theory, the hallucination theory, and so forth. Now, somebody like Bart Ehrman makes fun of this because I think he doesn't understand it. But this is basic probability theory. This is how you calculate the probability of the resurrection given the evidence and the background information. And the fallacy of Hume and the fallacy of Ehrman is in considering only this probability alone. Because the resurrection is, they think, highly improbable with respect to our general knowledge of the world, like the laws of nature, therefore they infer that the resurrection is highly improbable. And that's just fallacious. The probability of the resurrection, given the evidence and the background information, isn't equal to the probability of the resurrection just given the background information. I mean, that's obvious. You've got to add in the evidence for it to get the probability of the resurrection. And so what will really be key will be this factor down here. That is the naturalistic alternatives to the resurrection. If they are sufficiently improbable, say less than, you know, greatly less than 5 or less than 50%, then that can outbalance any intrinsic improbability in the resurrection itself. And that is Hume's fundamental failure in his argument, and also the fundamental failure of Bart Ehrman's argument. But I want to go further than that. What about this probability here? the intrinsic probability of the resurrection on the background information. Why think that that is intrinsically improbable? Why think that the resurrection of Jesus is improbable relative to the background information? And here I think it's very important that we specify exactly what the resurrection hypothesis is. The resurrection hypothesis is not the hypothesis that Jesus rose naturally from the dead. The resurrection hypothesis is not the hypothesis that Jesus rose naturally from the dead. That hypothesis is fantastically improbable, that all of the cells in Jesus' dead body would spontaneously come back to life again is so biologically and medically improbable that I think we could say that that's really naturally impossible. It is naturally impossible that Jesus would come back alive from the dead. And that's why we consider the resurrection a miracle, right? Because it's naturally impossible. So the resurrection hypothesis is not that Jesus rose naturally from the dead, which is highly improbable. The resurrection hypothesis is that God raised Jesus from the dead. And I don't see any reason, I'll take the question in a second, I don't see any reason to think that that's highly improbable. Why should we think that it is highly improbable that God raised Jesus from the dead? It seems to me that unless you could demonstrate either that God's existence is improbable or that God's wanting to raise Jesus from the dead is highly improbable, there's no way you can know that it's improbable that God raised Jesus from the dead. So that the person who wants to defend the intrinsic improbability of Jesus' resurrection would have to show, I think, either that it's highly improbable that God exists or it's highly improbable that God would want to raise Jesus. And I can't imagine how he would have that kind of knowledge to show that. So unless he can show that, I just don't think there's any grounds for thinking that the probability of R on B is very low. I think we have to at least be agnostic about it. I don't think we can say that it's improbable. Now, someone might say, well, but miracles are so infrequent that it's improbable in that sense. Miracles are rare. They hardly ever happen. So it's improbable in the sense that it's infrequent. But as John Ehrman points out in his book, Hume's Abject Failure, you can't use frequency as a theory of probability. Ehrman gives the example of scientists trying to find an event of proton decay in their nuclear research facility. Scientists, as Ehrman points out, are investing thousands of man hours and millions of dollars in trying to detect a single event of a proton decaying into its constituents. And yet this has never been observed. No one's ever observed an event of proton decay. So if you have a frequency model of probability, that would mean that the probability of this event is zero. But as John Ehrman points out, scientists are not investing millions and millions of dollars and thousands of research hours in trying to detect an event that has zero probability of occurring. So you can't use just frequency as a theory of probability to say something is improbable because it's infrequent. And this is especially evident when you're dealing with the decisions of a free agent. You see, a free agent can choose something precisely because it's rare or unusual. Suppose I go into a car lot to buy an automobile, and out of the 100 automobiles in the car lot, 99 of them are black, and there was one red one. Now, in calculating the probability that the car that I will drive out of the lot with is black, you've got to take into account more than just, well, 99 out of 100 are black. In fact, if you know anything about my tastes, you would say it's highly probable that Bill will pick the red car rather than the black one. I will pick it precisely because of its rarity and unusualness. Now, similarly, with regard to God, isn't it highly probable that in order to vindicate the radical claims of his son, for which he was crucified, that God would pick an event of extraordinary improbability, an event which is so singular that it has never happened before in the universe and will never happen again in the history of the universe. Namely, he raised him from the dead. It is the very infrequency and unusualness and rarity of the event that makes that event highly probable, that God would do such a thing to vindicate the claims of his son. So I think you can see that when you're working with a free agent and his decisions, you can't just use frequency as your theory of probability to say that because resurrections are infrequent, therefore it's highly improbable. So I really honestly believe that the detractor of miracles finds himself in a real bind here. Namely, I don't see any good way that he can prove that the probability of the resurrection on the background information is low, or desperately low, unless he has some good argument for atheism, or some argument that if God exists, he wouldn't want to raise Jesus from the dead. And of course, that takes us into the whole question of things like the problem of evil, arguments for the existence of God, and so forth. I think that the background information here includes things like the origin of the universe out of nothing in the finite past, the fine-tuning of the universe, the existence of objective moral values in the world, and all of the other arguments and evidences for God's existence. So that I think that the resurrection of Jesus on the background information is really not at all improbable, given the existence of God, which I think the background information renders likely. So, in short, I think Hume's argument is just completely fallacious. First of all, it fails to consider all of the probabilities that are necessary to consider. And then secondly, it assumes without justification that an event like the resurrection is highly intrinsically improbable. And that's why I think Bart Ehrman's skepticism is just so unnecessary. Given the evidence, the empty tomb, the origin of the Christian faith, the postmortem appearances of Jesus, there is simply no reason for his sort of skepticism with regard to the proclamation of the earliest disciples that God raised him from the dead. All right, any reaction or response to that? Robert? Yeah, this is one of the issues that came up in the debate, and I'm glad you asked it. Some thinkers think that it can. For example, Richard Swinburne is a very prominent philosopher at Oxford University, and he's written a book on the incarnation and resurrection in which he actually tries to give numbers to these figures. Now, Swinburne is very confident in this, and he comes out with a probability for the resurrection of 97%. Now, he says, don't put a whole lot of stock in this number, because, I mean, it's based on rough estimates. But I think what he would simply say is the resurrection is highly probable, given the evidence and the background information. I myself don't use this approach to the resurrection when I offer a case for it. Why? Because I think this probability here is really inscrutable. I think we can show with high probability that God exists. But I wouldn't know how to show with high probability that if God exists, he would raise Jesus from the dead, rather than do something else. I don't know how we could show that. So while I think we can confidently say this is not low, I'm not sure how to prove that it's high either. So I tend to just leave a question mark here, which means you can't really fill in numbers. I think what we can say is that it's not, it's not low. It's not less than, greatly less than 5, which means that it's not going to disprove the resurrection. Rather, the approach to the resurrection that I like to use is what's called inference to the best explanation. And you remember when I shared about the resurrection, what I said is you arrange the competing hypotheses and then you assess them in terms of certain criteria, like explanatory power, which one explains best the evidence, explanatory scope, which one explains the fullest range of the evidence, plausibility, degree of being ad hoc, or that is contrived and artificial. And in each case, I would try to show that the resurrection of Jesus passes these criteria, that it has strong explanatory power, wide explanatory scope. It is not seriously ad hoc. It is plausible, given Jesus' radical claims and ministry, and so on and so forth, so that you don't need to really assess these numbers on the approach that I would use. But I think this is useful against people like Ehrman and Hume, who negatively argue that miracles cannot be established by the evidence because miracles are inherently improbable, and therefore no amount of evidence can go to establish that. We can respond to that objection, I think, by showing that the critic cannot show the resurrection is improbable. Is that clear? Yeah, certainly. In other words, in this background information here, Hobbes wants to include things like maybe fulfilled prophecy, the accuracy of the Bible and other things, and all that. That's right, that can go into the background information. So somebody like Stephen Davis, who, example, is a Christian philosopher and has written a book on the resurrection, he argues that the resurrection is probable for someone who believes that the God of Israel exists. So he would say somebody who is a first century Jew confronted with the apostles' proclamation ought to believe in the resurrection. Because, you see, he'll pack into that background information all these other facts that suggests that God exists, that he is the God of Israel, and so forth. Good point. Yes, Cindy.
It also could be possible.
Right. Right. Cindy's point, for those who couldn't hear, is that it really gets back to the question of atheism and whether or not you believe God exists. Because obviously, if there is no God, then the hypothesis God raised Jesus from the dead has a probability of zero, right, if there is no God. So the argument requires you're at least open to the existence of God. The burden of proof here is on the critic. He's got to show God's existence is improbable or that he wouldn't want to raise Jesus. But if you're at least open to the idea that God exists, this could actually lead you to believe, well, wow, maybe there is a God after all. Or if you already do believe that there's a God, then that will make it all the more likely that, wow, this God has revealed himself in Christ. And so that's why I like, before giving an argument for the resurrection, to give all of the arguments for the existence of a creator, a designer, a moral lawgiver, and so forth. Yes?
Is Ehrman an atheist now?
Good question. Is Ehrman an atheist now? In a Washington Post interview I saw with him, he said that after he lost his faith in the Bible and in Christ, he also lost his faith in God. And so I think would call himself at best an agnostic, someone who no longer has a belief in God but doesn't really know whether God exists. So he I think he would characterize himself as an agnostic. Well, he should, but he doesn't. I mean, he just pours scorn on this. You remember in his letter, he says you should get rid of that ridiculous mathematical proof for the resurrection. Even though I'm not using this as a proof for the resurrection, he's using it as a disproof of the resurrection. And I'm just saying you can't do that because you don't know, you haven't estimated this probability, and you don't know what this probability is. So my position is purely defensive on this score. Yes, Joe? I don't think I would. Joe's point was every individual person's birth is a singular event that is rare. But, of course, births in general are not rare. So I'm not sure how that would be cashed out. I mean, in one sense, every historical event is unique, right? But there are certain kinds of events that occur. But as I said, I would just challenge the idea that rarity is a measure of probability at all. It's frequency just doesn't measure probability. They're not the same thing, especially when you're dealing with a free agent. Okay, I'll take one more question and then we'll close. Yes? It's a not or a negative symbol. Same thing. So this would be, what is the probability of no resurrection given our background information? And this is, what is the probability of the empty tomb, the postmortem appearances, the origin of the disciples' faith, given that no resurrection occurred? In other words, how probable is it that you'd have an empty tomb, post-mortem appearances and so forth, if, say, they just hallucinated, or if, say, the women went to the wrong tomb, or things of that sort? What is the explanatory power? And I think that's one of the tremendous weaknesses of these alternative naturalistic explanations, is that they're very weak in their explanatory power of the evidence. All right, well, that wraps up what we wanted to say with regard to the problem of miracles. So next time we'll move into a further dimension of the doctrine of creation, which will be dealing with the doctrine of angels and demons. See you next week.
The copyright for the content of this recording is held by Dr. William Lane Craig.